Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
We have another packed show for you this week on Dublin's Talking Sport. Ken is in studio with me, and we discuss all things football and see how Manchester United seem to be on the bounce back after that brilliant win against Liverpool on Monday night. Declan Drake in GAA and Sean Lane have a roundup of all of the latest news from around the capital. So download the show now wherever you get your podcasts. Starting off this morning, just a little bit of sad news on my own behalf. My first ever manager in Leinster, Ken Ging, passed away last night. Wonderful man, a real rugby legend, loved by all in the Leinster and Ireland and Greystones community. So passed away after a little bit of an illness that was going on for a while. So rest in peace, Ken, and our condolences go out to all of his family this morning. And he was a great fella. He gave me my first break with Leinster. He was with Greystones man, and he got me a trial, we'll say, at the beginning in Leinster. So,
he was a brave man anyway, giving you your first start.
Exactly. He was a gas man. He opened a pub years ago in Bray called the Silver Fern, because he would be going back, you know, he knew, played rugby back in the day when rugby was all about connections and people and everything else. But he had a great pub in Bray in the Queensborough Road called the Silver Fern. I remember he got a brilliant coup when he opened. It was called a Silver Fern after, you know, the All Blacks crest.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
But he got a great coup just a couple of weeks after it opened. He managed to get the entire All Blacks squad tour at the time into the pub.
Wow.
And it was a massive thing, you know, because that stuff like that didn't happen too often back in those days. And it was a massive night, and the word spread around town, and all these big Maori lads were in the Silver Fern.
I'd say that cost him a few quid.
Yeah, well, it cost him a few quid
points.
In steaks, because they were specialising in steaks in the place. So I'd say cost him a few bob and that, but a great way to open it, yeah. And a real Greystones man, great club man. So, I said, rest in peace, Ken. Yeah. You'll be missed by all in the rugby fraternity. Okay, how has your week been, Ken?
It's been brilliant. What do you mean? It couldn't be better. It started off on Monday night. Get in there, United.
Yeah, I gave you a bit of grief last week.
I got to win the league.
I did give you a bit of grief last week, no doubt about it. But it was probably deserved at the time, but what a bounce back, I have to say.
Yeah, yeah. Some transformation, wasn't it?
Unreal. I think the most amazing bit for me watching the game was just looking at the flashbacks to the stand where you had Maguire sitting there, you had Ronaldo sitting there, and you had the young crop out in the pitch. And it kind of, I don't know, it made me feel that the writing was on the wall for some of those players. Yeah, the sooner Ronaldo's out the gate, the better. And Maguire needs to book up and sort out what's going on.
The whole attitude of the team was different, you know. They were really up for it right from the beginning. I mean, I was at the correspondent fixture last year, sitting in the Stretford End, and they were abysmal. It was one of the worst performances I've ever seen, and they were beaten 5-0, absolutely trashed, and Liverpool were fantastic. But this was it was almost looking at like a different side, even to the one that lost to Brentford and of course to Brighton as well. So he's obviously, you know, had some sort of, you know, major input. He's shaked up the team a bit, brought in some new players, and they definitely showed a really good reaction to whatever went on from the Brentford game to the Liverpool game. A completely different United squad that we haven't seen, a performance that we haven't seen for quite some time, you know. Now, whether they can keep it going is another thing. You know, they play Southampton away at 12:30 today, but I think it will give them a lot of confidence, you know.
It will, but there was definitely a different attitude there in the players. You could see that they were first to everything. Now, I thought Liverpool were very shaky and very slow at the blocks, and it was almost like, I won't say they expected to win, turned up expecting to win, but they certainly didn't seem to have their A game with them. They were a bit sluggish looking, and United were first to everything. And I think from the start you saw that they just beat the Liverpool players to every breaking ball, but as well as that, they just swarmed around every Liverpool player when they got them. There was three, four United lads every single time around them. I just thought it was back to the United that we would have been used to seeing. So then you're saying to yourself, okay, well, here's the question then. Do they have they seem to have the players.
Yeah.
So
it's just the attitude, you know, it's the attitude. And if they can keep that same attitude, you know what it's like, Reggie, playing a team sport. Everybody has to be pulling together, you know, and if you can't be carrying anybody at that level. And if they're all pulling together, they're all fighting and trying to win the ball back and running, even the stats, like how much they ran compared to like the previous games as well. where they went running or tackling. The tackles were up, so all the stats across the board were well up. So yeah, hopefully it keeps going. I was in Waxy O'Connor's in the middle of Leicester Square watching it, right? And I found this little small little room, and it was, I knew they were Irish, you know, like in front of me, and I was the only one screaming for United. Felt like got these dirty looks from the women more than the guys, like, you know, oh, if looks could kill. But it was
they're all Liverpool supporters,
all Liverpool fans. Oh, as soon as the match was over, they all got up and walked out straight out the door, and another dirty look to boot as well, like, you know. But it was great. I absolutely loved it. I didn't want to go to the match. I could have gone, but I thought, no, I'd rather just, after last year's episode, after losing 5-0, I thought, no, I'm just going to watch it on the TV, because I didn't expect them to win at all, to be honest.
The atmosphere seemed quite incredible, because there was all that protesting going on beforehand, and Casemiro arrived, and that seemed to lighten the mood a little bit outside the ground. It came across on the television that the atmosphere
was electric.
Unreal.
It was great to see him coming over to Roy Keane, wasn't it? And then Ronaldo blanking Jamie Carragher. I thought that was fantastic.
It was just a little bit illegal, and Carragher, the way he turned around, and he completely blanked him. It was so obvious. But
I saw a great tweet during the week, and it was a girl tweeting about looking for her apartment was quite hot, and she was looking for a fan that wasn't too noisy, you know. And somebody tweeted back, "Well, Liverpool fans aren't too noisy at the moment." That was great, a great retort.
Very clever, But I suppose, Liverpool. That's the other side of the coin. Then, they were poor, and they've had a very bad start to the season, and you know, they're under pressure now already.
It's early days. Three matches in. I was just reading a little article that Graeme Souness here in the Daily Mail. He says, when they lost to Man City back on Stevens Day in 1981, they were 12th in the First Division, and the front pages or the back pages, the empire is crumbling, but they went on to win the league, even though they were 12th, and that was at Christmas time. So, no, I think Liverpool, they got some class players. They do miss Mane, though.
Big time.
They had a lot of injuries as well.
Yeah,
you know?
They did. Yeah, they had 9 injuries. But Mane,
I think once they have all their team back, and when that Nunes, he looks a really top goal scorer, that guy. And of course, he was unavailable for his red card. But I think when they get all their players back, they'll be tough to beat, Liverpool.
Yeah. What about Arsenal sitting up
there?
Arsenal
are flying. Flying. He's done a great job, Arteta. Absolutely. You must be really happy.
Well, I mean, 3-3 in Fulham today, so at home. You know, you don't like taking anything for granted, but it's one you definitely expect to win. But they're playing deadly football as well, and they're scoring good goals. Mm. So it's not just scraping through, you know. They look very strong. They look very solid. If you get another win on the board today, which you'd expect... City haven't slipped up already. You just never know.
4-4, it looks that way. I think they've got a good squad. He's bought very cleverly. I think Jesus is going to be a really good sort of acquisition for him. And he's going to score plenty of goals. He didn't get enough games, I don't think, at City, but I think he's a real top goal scorer. So I think he's going to be a good boy for them, you know.
What's going to happen with Maguire? I mean, captaincy and all that kind of stuff. Is he going to be in and out all season?
Well, I mean, it says here, Captain Hooked. I mean, Ten Hag warns Maguire, being United skipper, won't get him his place back. And that's the way it should be, you know. He's been very lacklustre. He's been terrible, really, to be honest, for a captain. And particularly for the price he paid, 80 million, he's been awful. You know, a lot of the United fans have really sort of gone off him, but it's going to take him an awful lot to get him back in that side, because that Martinez, he was like man of the match for me, I think, you know, next to Varane. He played really, really well. Real sort of tigerish attitude, and that's what they need. And that, even though he's a small little lad, he's not a huge like centre half. But I tell you what, can he tackle and does he put his foot in? And that's what they need, you know. Whereas Maguire, it was not like that at all. Very sloppy out of defence, caused a few goals at the Brentford game as well. Like, so, yeah, it's going to take him a bit to get back. And then of course, it's England. You know, if you can't get in for United, it's England. Position will be in jeopardy as well.
Well, we'll have to watch that space. We'll talk about it more later on in the show. Alan Cawley, of course, will be joining us for a good long football chat towards the end of the show, so don't miss that. I know you're big into the tennis as well, Ken, and it was sad, I suppose, is the word you'd have to use, to see Djokovic is going to have to pull out the US Open because of the vaccination situation. I thought that was all gone in America. I didn't realise you still had to be vaccinated.
I know.
It's strange.
It is strange. Well, I suppose they have the rules, just like they did in Australia when he couldn't play there either. So, yeah, he's totally opposed to getting the vaccination. He said he doesn't want to put anything in his body that he doesn't know much about, you know. And he's one of those anti-vaxxers, so he has to suffer the consequences. And I think if they sort of, you know, make an exception for him, well, then it sort of opens up the floodgates. So.
Yeah, but I just thought that was all gone. Yeah. I didn't realise there was still a case of you had to be vaccinated to get into the States. I didn't realise that.
There's a few of the snooker players, Ronnie O'Sullivan included, as an anti-vaxxer. Yeah. You know, so anytime he has to.
Has there
to
been
go
any
away,
situations where they. Is there places
well, they
where
have
not
to, they'll have to do the, you know, the test PCR before, test. And they can get into certain countries, but. Other countries, just like America, although we don't play in America, but if he has to go to China or anywhere, he will have to get vaccinated, otherwise he won't be able to play there.
Just won't play.
But Joe Trump, I think, is an anti-vaxxer as well.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so there's a few of them. But yeah, it's a shame for Djokovic. I mean, he's one behind, isn't he, Nadal? Nadal's on 22, he's on 21, and Federer now on 20. So to try and catch or overhaul Nadal, he's only got two tournaments to play in, you know, and the French and and Wimbledon.
Yeah, well, it's going to be, the tournament is going to be the lesser for it.
My son is playing today, by the way. I'm straight out, 10:15. He's out in the under 16 final out in Castleknock.
Brilliant.
And the under 18 final as well.
He's only 14, isn't he?
He's not 15 till November, so I'll be out cheering him on. So he might even be listening in. So if he's listening in, I hope.
Fair
wish him
play,
all the best.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
That's good going. Under 16s and under 18 finals at 14 years of age. Well done. best of luck.
That wouldn't have happened in the snooker days.
Yeah, he would win it all around, you don't mind that. See, your other beloved team Rovers are doing okay. They can still challenge for top two finish. Good home form, you know. Got a good result during the week.
Yeah.
So
yeah, really good, and it's great to see them doing so well. You know, and particularly, you know, how they played in Europe as well. You know, and the money that will be sort of coming in from that, it will be fantastic for the club as well. You know,
absolutely.
They won't need me up there selling programs anymore. That's
no,
for sure.
Those days are well and truly gone. They've moved on. Actually, a fellow I was playing golf with yesterday was telling me his young lad is over there in the underage structure. He's only 12, I think.
Yeah.
But he said it's incredible to set up. You know, the way they have it all lined out there with all the underage teams and the way they're looked after and the training that they get, the gear. There's a pathway there for the young lads. I didn't know this. You can't go to England now until you're 18. I didn't realise that was a situation because of the Brexit ruling and everything else. So they have the academy.
The full academy, say.
Yeah, they've set up modelled on the likes of United and these places whereby the kids are getting schooled and everything over there and education.
Yeah.
And
I think that's very important, because a lot of kids would have left to go to England at 16 maybe.
Yeah, and get lost
and
along
get
the way.
Lost, and come back and... You know, it's so difficult to get through, but that's a really good idea. And to get the education along the way is brilliant as well.
Declan Drake with you on GAA for the next few minutes here in the programme. And quite a busy section too as we look across the go-ahead senior football hurling, Camogie and ladies football championships. We also talk to Sean Lane, our regular hurling analyst, about the big news emerging from the capital last Monday, the appointment of Micheál Donoghue as the county inter-county boss for the next 3 years. And also the shock news of Adrian O'Sullivan stepping down as boss of the Camogie team as well. So, as I say, Sean is in studio with us this morning. Good morning to you, Sean.
Morning, Declan. How are you?
All well in Ballinteer?
Absolutely, yeah. Lovely sunny day.
Yes, indeed. Thank God. Perfect for hurling. We'll get to that a little bit later with Sean. But we're going to start with the Senior Football Championship now, sponsored by Go Ahead, of course. Group 1 last week, Temple Oak drew with Raheny. Killian O'Gara with a leveller there in a 1-10-13 points draw. Raheny 9 points up at one stage in that game, but as I say, Killian O'Gara with the equaliser for the Temple Oak Sing Street men, back up in Senior 1 football this year. And his brother Owen O'Gara, of course, is expected to make his championship debut in Wexford tomorrow afternoon. It'll be interesting to see how that one goes. Kilmacud Crokes, the defending champions, well, they of course had Shane Walsh's transfer confirmed during the week. They made it 2-2 against Sean's Ballinteer St John's, 12-8, so a 4-point win there for Robbie Brennan's crew. Elsewhere, wins for Ballyboden St Enda's. Coola with the O'Callaghan brothers outstanding, 4 goals and 7 points between Conn and Niall. Just makes you think back, doesn't it, to the Kerry game if we had Conn. Really does. Nafina, they made it 2-2. Whitehall Cullum Kill, they were victors as well. 8 points for Cormac Costello in that particular one, while Luke and Sars were also winners last weekend over Round Towers of Lusk. to the Ladies' Championship now, also sponsored by Go Ahead. In Group A, Thomas Davis made it 3 from 3. A very impressive win over Coola on the Kiltipper Road, 3-8 to 1-5. Kilmacud Crokes were huge winners over St. Bridget's, 6-15 to 1-goal. Crokes really laying down serious markers in this year's championship, that's for sure. Would probably come through with Thomas Davis out of that group. Then in Group B, champions Foxrock Cabinteely, well, they were involved in a real ding-dong clash with Clontarf. 3-13 apiece, that one finished. Some game. Nafina, far too strong for a disappointing Ballyboden St. Denda's. 12 points the margin there. 1-13 to 4 points at the end of the hour. And that championship continues around the county next Wednesday evening. Now to the Senior Hurling One Championship, which today has its third series of games. Double headers either side of the River Liffey. We're going to start with the defending champions, Kilmacud Crokes, who have an O'Toole Park date in Crumlin this afternoon at 5:30 with Lucan Sars. As I say, Sean Lane, our regular hurling analyst, is with us in studio here this morning. And quite simply, Sean, this is do or die for Sars this afternoon against the champions. How do you see it going?
Yeah, no, you're 100% right, Declan. It's a group where you can't really slip up, and all the talk at the very first day out was that Lucan would take care of St. Vincent's, but they didn't. Vincent's got across the line, so Lucan know they can't slip up today, because Lucan's last game, Declan, is against Bridget's, and it's going to be do or die for there. One is going to be in the relegation, and I'd say the other is going to be in the quarter final of the championship. So the McCaffrey brothers and the Crumley brothers, they'll know all that out in Lucan, and they'll just have to really get at this, but it's not going to be easy. The Crokes lads have had a few away for the first couple of rounds. They have a few more back. They're very near full strength. And Crokes, you know, okay, they maybe stole a senior championship, we've said before on the show, but they are county champions, and they have some smashing players, and they've had a marvellous underage structure for the last 5 or 6 years. So that's going to be a ding-donger, as you say, 5:30 in O'Toole Park, and it's like a knockout game, Declan.
Yeah, that's an all Southside clash. The other game taking place there is earlier at 4:15, and it's an all Northside clash. Crave Kieran taking on St. Bridget's. Johnny McGurk, St. Bridget's, former Crave legend, of course, himself. And a lot to live up to in this particular game as well.
There is, and look, Crave just aren't going well. I mean, they beat Ballantyre in the relegation playoff in the league, so they are, I think they only won 3 games out of the 11. They haven't won a championship match. I watched the last game against Vincent's, and they stayed with Vincent's, Declan, for probably 45 minutes, but an awful lot of that was down to what Vincent's were missing rather than what Crave Kieran were taking. Alan McCrabbis has really got his work cut out this evening to raise these guys to a level where they'll beat Bridget's. As you said, Johnny McGurk will know himself. Lucan have slipped up. Remember, Bridget's and Vincent's have already drawn, so that's a good point each. You know, Bridget's will know that if Lucan are beaten today and they can get over the line against Crave Kieran, they'll probably just edge this and get into the playoffs. So Johnny will know against his own club as well, he can't slip up here. And I don't think they will. I think Bridges will get across the line on this one, Declan.
Of course, we're very much into the split season now, Sean, and looking out the window of our studio here at Dublin's Docklands, it's a day which was made for the split season, wasn't it? Playing championship hurling in typical summer conditions, fast ground and nice blue skies overhead.
And it's great to, you know, you can even see the crowds are a little bit bigger because people do like the fast ball, and you know, it's a great game to watch, but you know, it's the right time to be playing it. And I think everybody's buying in now. We've said about this before, should the All-Ireland be a week or two later, and possibly that's the case, but the split season to me is working for everybody, and long may it continue.
Okay, well, let's cross the Liffey then, Sean, to Parnell Park, and county headquarters will host a double bill of hurling championship action and senior one today as well. First up at 3:45, St. Jude's taking on former All-Ireland champions Coola, back-to-back All-Ireland champions Coola, of course, under the great Matty Kenny. 3:45, that one throwing in. Are we seeing much signs, do you think, Sean, of Coola getting somewhere near the level that they were 4 or 5 years ago?
Well, I suppose I was very critical, and you might remember the first day out against Plunkett's. I actually thought Plunkett's were the better team for three quarters of the game, and we all know Plunkett's have definitely improved. But definitely the last day, Coola stood up, beat a good Nafina team and put up 125. As you said earlier, Conn scored 1-6 in the football. He's to be added to the panel and will probably play and start today as well. So Coola, are they back to where they were? Probably not. Are they on the way back to where they were? Definitely so. You know, and I can see that Coola, you know, will definitely get across the line here.
Ominous signs if you say cooler on the way back, that's for sure. The other game is 5:30 at county headquarters this evening. Cross Liffey battle this. Na Féin, last year's beaten county finalist, taking on Ballyboden St Enda's. This is an intriguing contest as well. What are the permutations surrounding this one, Sean?
Well, this is interesting, Declan, because Na Féin, as we know, should have probably won the county final last year, and you know, you would have put them down to maybe get across the line against Coola the last day, but Coola beat Na Féin fairly comprehensively. Now Na Féin have a few away. I know the Curry brothers were away the last day, and they're pretty good, you know, stick people up front and can get lots of scores. Bowden certainly have, you know, they gave Plunkett an awful drill in the first day, scored 8 goals. They're unbeaten. They're playing well. They were beaten, as we know, in the Division 1 league final by Lucan, and it seems to have woken them up a good bit. David Curtin is the boss there, and as I've said before, he knows his stuff in relation to Club Hurling. You know, I still, on form, I actually see Bowden beating Na Féin here. And, right, look, if you look at the group, it's probably going to end up Coola, Na Féin and Bowden go through with Jude's and Plunkett's losing out. You know, but look at the last game for Na Féin. If they lose this one, is against Plunkett's. And it's hard. I would have thought I'd have said this 3 months ago. Mm. You know, that won't be easy for them either. So Na Féin will have to step up and pull up their socks a little bit to get back anywhere near to last year's form.
With your record of predictions, there'll be some teams that'll be hoping that you're badly wrong, of course. We won't mention Waterford, will we? No, we won't. No, not for another week or two, at least. Okay, that's it on the Hurling Championship. Of course, the Senior 2 and Senior 3 Championship matches continue this evening. Sean's own Ballinteer have a date with...
Castleknock.
That's at home, is it?
Yeah, we're at home. I suppose the two front runners there, Fogs are clear on one side and Whitehall on the other side, and look, at it could be Ballinteer and Finbars go through on one side, but it's awfully looking like Ballyboden and Croke's second team will also meet them in the quarterfinals.
Interesting times ahead, and there's a Tier 3 Championship ongoing as well, but we won't talk about that this week. Okay, let's move on then to last Monday, and Monday's supposed to be a quiet day sports wise, isn't it really? But it certainly wasn't last Monday, with big breaking news from the capital that Micheál Donoghue had been appointed manager of the Dublin senior hurling team on a 3-year contract. The Galway native, who led his own county to the All-Ireland success back in 2017, taking over from another tribesman, that in Matty Kenny. Sean Lane, I had, well, similarly to a lot of people, perhaps been a little bit sceptical or concerned, if you like, about the time that the appointment was taking. It was almost 7 weeks since Matty Kenny had stepped down as manager, or at least the announcement of his stepping down had come through. But in fairness to the county board, they've really pulled a gem out on this one with the appointment of Micheál Donoghue. What's your own reaction to it?
Yeah, absolutely delighted with it, Declan. Great pedigree as a man in his own playing days, won National Leagues in All-Ireland Minor in 21, stepped into management then and was selector in the 05 and 07 under 21 teams that won All-Irelands, and then was own club Clarenbridge. You know, he played in a club final, got beaten by Bor, but look at, you know, he'll be remembered for the 2017 season where Galway won the Leinster Championship, they won the National League, and they got across the line in the All-Ireland for the first time since 1988. So, look, he definitely has something. I spoke to, God, Declan, I spoke with 10, 11 or 12 hurling people across Crokes, Bowden, Vincent's, Crave, O'Toole's and all, and everybody's delighted with the appointment. You know, and the county board, look at, you know, sometimes people, when things go on very long, they say, oh God, we're not going to get someone good. But they had somebody good in the pipeline all along. They had a good process. We mentioned about the subcommittee, etc., etc. I just think it's a very, very good appointment for Dublin Hurling.
In one or two sentences, it's a big challenge that lies ahead of them. What are the biggest challenges in your opinion?
Well, look, Declan, I'll make no bones about it. To me, the very first phone call I'd make if I was the manager of Dublin going forward for 3 years, I'd ring young O'Donnell and make sure that he was committed to the hurling would be the first thing. And I honestly think that we're missing a trick with the Dublin team, the under-20s that went to the All-Ireland final with Cork. I think we two under-20 teams there in a row were really, really good under one of your club men, O'Brien. And basically, we need to take four or five of them and blood them into the panel. I won't name them here. I think there's three or four that probably have come to their best by sell date, and you know, we need to move them on. So he needs to change the panel. He needs to keep a Danny Sutcliffe as well, would be another phone call, a Chris Crummie. I'd make sure that I had these staunch guys that have given great service, that I had all of them on board, and I would add to it with a couple of young fellas that have proven it at under 21 level. Cork have done it at that stage, and Cork have even gone and appointed the under 20 managers, their new senior manager. We have the players now, and it's a matter of a 3-year term with a guy like Micheál Donoghue. I think it'll be good for Dublin hurling.
Well, we certainly wish him every success in the job. It is a big job taking it on, but it's a great coup, I think, for the county board to have appointed him, because, you know, when the merry-go-round was going around about the names that were being linked with the job, his name, I don't think, was mentioned anywhere.
No, that's very true. And if you look at a decade over the last 10 or 12 years, we've had Anthony Daly, we've had Matty Kenny, we've had Ger Cunningham at the time, was a good appointment, didn't turn out that way, and we now have Micheál Donoghue. So, you know, hands up to the county board. Like, they do take their time with it, but they're after, over the last 10, 12, 13 years, we're after getting very, very good managers. It's up to the players now, Declan, to react to this the same way they did, the way Anthony Daly, when he came in, it took a year or so, but all of a sudden he got them all on the one agenda, and they delivered a Leinster Championship and a National League.
Well, I've no doubt that he'll be at one of the venues for this afternoon's four games, and the rest of his management team will probably be at the other ones as work starts in earnest. That was good news on the managerial front. Later on that day, as I was sitting down to a cup of tea, the phone pings to say that Adrian O'Sullivan had stepped down as manager of the Camogie team. Now, that's a huge blow, Sean, considering the considerable progress that the team made in 2022 under his tutelage.
I wasn't lucky, Declan, to be playing, having a cup of tea. I got my daughter pinged me the news, which she was very upset about. She's a staunch Dublin Camogie player, as well a lot of the girls in Ballinteer. But they were devastated because, he had introduced a lot of young people, so he was on his second year. He got some great results in the championship. Cork beat us in the round robin, and Kilkenny beat us in knockout, and Cork and Kilkenny are the two teams that end up in the final. So we had some marvellous results under him. It's huge shock, and the bigger issue here is, fine, when it happened in hurling, you could sit down and make a list of 8 or 10 fellas and go after them. Where do you go now looking for a senior Camogie manager? Do you look at Donny Fox, who's managed Jude's, a former Galway County minor, won an All-Ireland? He was part of the ticket, he was doing the coaching. Does he step up to be a manager? And I don't know if he's gone as well. Do we have club people like Declan Feeney, who's now managing the Nafina senior Camogie team and has previously managed the Dublin Colleges to an All-Ireland in 2006 against Flannans? Do we ask him to step up, or do we go what a lot of people would do, we trawl and have a look at all of the ex-female players that have played Camogie, the Louise O'Hara's and all of this stage, and say, look, we're going to put an all-woman management team in charge of the Camogie, as they've done in Kilkenny with Anne Downey and people like that. So that's a step forward. We've learned from the European Championships and the ladies. Lady managers, lady officials, tournament was a huge success. Maybe that's the route to go.
So who wants to be the Serena Weigman for Dublin Camogie? that's the burning question. Just finally, Sean, on Camogie, we had done a wrap-up of the senior championships in men's hurling, football, and ladies football indeed as well. Just a brief line about the Camogie Championship. How, first of all, are the defending champions St Jude's getting on in that?
Yeah, Jude's are playing Plunkett's and Lucan are playing Vincent's, and they're in the one group. I think there's no doubt that Plunkett suffered very, very heavily last day out against Vincent's, and I think Jude's will take care of them. But tomorrow's game with Lucan at home to Vincent's, that'll be a big game for Vincent's. I do think they'll get across the line there. The other group is fantastic, Declan, because this is the future of Dublin Camogie and a new future. You've Nafina playing Bowden. Bowden lost the last day out to Castleknock, which was, you know, for a new group. Now, Castleknock are at home on Sunday against Crokes tomorrow morning. And if they win that, they're through to the semi-final championship. Never happened before. So that's great for Dublin Camogie.
Great freshness indeed as well. Yeah, you heading out to O'Toole Park this evening, do you think?
I'll definitely get to the first one, but I'll have to go and see the Ballinteer seniors playing Castleknock in Ballinteer at 6.
Pierce Park, 6 o'clock for me. Crumlin versus Kilmacud Crokes in the Tier 3 championship.
Okay, it's time to turn our attention to football now, and it's been a busy week. Plenty going on, and Rovers, of course, not doing too badly either. And during the week, Declan Drake caught up with Sean Kavanagh. Let's have a listen to what he had to say.
No, it was great. Look, we spoke before the game that we want to keep the record going and we want to win the game. So, look, we played 4-1. So, we look forward to the group stage and welcome people here and hopefully keep that run going.
Cagey enough first half. Could have gone in 1-1 perhaps even. You had the chance and then Alan Mann is doing what he's been doing most of the season, producing a wonderful save.
Alan's brilliant. Look, he's kept us in games for the length of time he's been here. He's brilliant. He's the best around for us. Look, we thought we'd done okay first half. They're a good side, aren't they? They're going to have chances. They're going to have a bit of the ball. But I thought we'd done well. And like we said before the game, we'll try to keep this unbeaten run going. And we did. We won the game.
What is it about this venue and the connection between the team and the supporters that makes it so special? It helps you achieve results like this.
I think it's just, look, if you play here and you give effort, you give it your all, I think the fans are going to respond, and they did tonight, to be fair to them. They were brilliant again. Every European game, they've been brilliant. Once we give maximal effort, and I think they'll get behind us, and like I said, tonight they did again, and it makes it hard for people to come here. Look, four teams have come here, and we've won 4 games, so it must be a difficult venue to come to when the crowd's like that.
In seasons gone by, it would have been a moral victory to have won the game tonight, but you would have exited the tie and exited Europe. Not the case this year at all, because you have the Conference League draw on Friday, so you're going to have at least 3 more nights like this to come. And the good news is, of course, it's in Tala Stadium as well.
Yeah, no, everyone was delighted with that's in Tala. I think the Aviva, personally, I probably didn't want it, to be honest, but like you're saying tonight, when teams come here and you start well, you get a bit of the ball, you sort of apply a bit of pressure. It's a hard place to come to, but we'll look forward to the next 3 home games in the group stage, and we'll look to win them.
This team keeps biting back at critics with the answers in the right way, and one of the recent arguments was, you know, Thursday, Sunday would be difficult to maintain. You came back from Hungary last week, you beat your nearest challenge as well here last Sunday, so that firmly answered that particular question. And you have another tough game now in the cup away to draw on Sunday.
Yeah, look, like you said, Thursday, Sunday, it's not easy, but look, we have a group of players in there who are hungry, who want to win everything, and Sunday will be difficult. It's not an easy place to go. They're a good side, they showed here when we played them. We drew 1-1, they're a good team, but look, we'll have to recover, get ready for Sunday and go up there and see.
Yeah, get ready for Sunday. They're not resting on their laurels. Sean Kavanagh, they're talking to you during the week, Declan. And, you know, that's their 4th win in 4 home games in the 2 main European club competitions this season so far.
Yeah, absolutely outstanding stuff, Reg. It looked as if it was going to be a draw on Thursday night till 2 substitutes combined, Jack Burns' corner and Andy Lyons popping up with a bullet-like header in front of the south stand to set 7,500 people into complete ecstasy. Deserved win on the night, and as you say, 4 home wins in a row in the competition, and that gives them tremendous grounds for optimism and confidence after yesterday's group stage draw was made.
And what was that draw? There was some interesting teams, Sweden and Germany.
Yeah, Djurgården Gardens of Sweden, who they've played before in European competition. They've Molde from Norway and Ghent from Belgium. So yeah, they'll be a little disappointed in some respects that they didn't land West Ham maybe or Villarreal, you know. But when you look at it on paper, there are some very winnable ties there, particularly at home in Tala Stadium with the record and the form that they're in at home. So plenty of great nights to come, starting on the 8th of September. The fixtures have to be announced, but that's when the actual group stage of the competition will start.
Absolutely. Okay, it's FAI Cup weekend as well. Plenty of different things going on, but I suppose the big one that everyone will be looking at, the Drogheda against Rovers on Sunday, 5:00.
Yeah. It's not the first time the two sides will have met after a Rovers European game. They met a few weeks back at Tala, and Drogheda actually held Rovers to a 1-1 draw. And they've beaten Dundalk since. Both teams have beaten Dundalk since. So it'll be an interesting evening up there in United Park, or heading the game park tomorrow evening, from, I think it's 5:00 is the kickoff. They're very ambitious at Rovers to do the double this year. They see it as a very big game, very important game for them. And they'll want to continue their winning run and advance to the quarterfinal draw on Tuesday.
Absolutely, well, no doubt about it. It'll be interesting to see how that all works out, and we wish them the best. Okay, we're having a little bit of trouble getting Alan Cawley, but that's no problem because we have Declan and Ken in studios here. I want to turn our attention now to the Premier League, of course. We spoke about it a little bit earlier on, Ken, but there's plenty of action this weekend. I'm going to start with United, give you a little chance to get on the airwaves again about it, but that Southampton away game after...
No, I can't take any more of this.
It's only a very slight little blip, Declan. You know, they're not back
Alan's,
yet. They're
Alan's
getting
probably in the bookies doing his bets now for today.
Well, considering there for a while ago you could get even money on United getting a top six finish, I think that's probably says a lot about their season so far. But look, it's been great excitement about that result against Liverpool on Monday night. Good performance for them. But Southampton away, bit of a banana skin.
Yeah, it is, yeah. And I know United have a good results against Southampton. They haven't beaten them, I think, Southampton in, since 2016. And that was 1-0 at Old Trafford. So United's results against Southampton are not too bad. But you know, it's like anything. It's always after the Lord Mayor show, isn't it? That you put in a great performance against Liverpool, but you got to follow it up. And Southampton away at St Mary's is always a difficult game. The crowd are going to be well up for it. And, you know, he has his team. They've got 4 points in the first three games. So they'd be very, very pleased. And particularly after the way they played last week against Leicester, beating them 2-1. Away from home was a great result for them. So Ched Evans, their top striker, is scoring very, very freely at the moment. So it's going to be a tough game. But so it'll be interesting to see how United follow up that great result from Monday, you know.
Yeah, and there's a number of teams kind of, you know, making a good start to the season. You know, it was great to see Nottingham Forest back in the Prem. Everybody was delighted to see that. And they haven't started too badly either. And they're taking on Spurs tomorrow, I think that game is, at home. So Spurs off to a good start as well, Dick. I suspect they'll be targeting this as one that they could get a result on. But like I said, Nottingham Forest going great. Could be a tough one for Spurs.
Yeah, it certainly could, and delighted to see Forrest back in the big time. Dave Rogers, my old Shelburne mate from many, many years ago, is on the coaching staff of the club there, so it's great to see them back. But yeah, it's been a good start by Tottenham, very solid, very consistent. Second season syndrome working well there for Antonio Conte, but Helio Marca 3 points in that game. But just briefly going back to the Southampton United game, there's 2 points. I wonder, will United play in the green shirts today after their last game against Brentford? Famous grey shirts against Southampton many years ago. And of course, a big day for young Gavin Bazunu as well, who would be expected to play in goal against Manchester United. I mean, that's the type of thing that you dream about growing up as a schoolboy, isn't it?
For our Liverpool fans, Ken, there's going to be a big, huge result needed today against Bournemouth. I mean, things are not going right the way that they would have expected to, but Bournemouth, definitely a team that expect to take care of and get back on track.
Yeah, they're 1-8 to win at home today, and I can't see anything other than a Liverpool home win against Bournemouth. Bournemouth just come up. They've done really well, you know, and they started pretty okay, but I think Liverpool will be too much at Anfield. The one I like as well, interesting game, is Brighton against Leeds. Leeds played so well against Chelsea. And they destroyed them last week, and they'll be buoyed with a lot of confidence. And of course, Brighton have got off to a good start as well. The manager at Brighton, really, really top manager, and he was sort of scouted for United at one stage, but just didn't have any Champions League experience. So, but I think that's going to be an interesting game. Leeds away from home, Brighton at home.
Brilliant start for Leeds, as you said. 7 points already after three games, playing excellent football, looking really good. Yeah, so that's definitely one to watch. The other one I'm interested in is, I expect it to be a good result, City at home to Crystal Palace. Of course, they're the red hot favourites, but Palace haven't been playing too badly either, you know, and City, I would say, slipped up in that 3-3 draw. That's definitely not like them. So, I don't know, Palace, any chance of causing a bit of an upset in City today?
I wouldn't have thought so, to be honest with you. I would expect the backlash from City, particularly with the week they would have had in training under Guardiola. That's a game that would have been analysed to within an inch of its life. So we'll have the game plan perfectly worked out today. Now, Vieira's Palace, as you say, they are a tough team to play against. They've had some good results, but yeah, fully expect City to bounce back today. They'll be very disappointed, not only with that draw, but the way, you know, other results had gone last weekend for them. Liverpool drawing with Manchester United, or sorry, being beaten by Manchester United. It's a bit of wishful thinking there for a second. they being beaten by Manchester United, that kind of neutralised their own result to a point.
Been a brutal start for Leicester so far.
Yeah.
Right down there at the bottom, and things not getting any easier today, Ken. Chelsea at home against Leicester today.
Yeah.
And Chelsea needing to get a good result and, you know, put their case forward for this season. So... yeah, already looks like it's going to be a tough one for
I think they're a banker, Chelsea today, yeah. Particularly if you're down them in a like 3 or 4 timer. Leicester are 13-2 away, Chelsea 2-5 at home. I can't see anything other than a Chelsea win, although, you know, they've had Koulibaly, he was sent off, so he won't be playing. They don't really have a top striker, you know, that Havertz, Werner's gone back, isn't he, to Germany? They've got Havertz, but they really sort of could do with an out-and-out striker, someone who's a prolific goal scorer, and they don't really have that. And that may be their Achilles heel again this year, Chelsea. But still, I just fancy them at the Bridge. They're very, very difficult to beat. So Chelsea banker, I think, today.
Nervous times right across Merseyside, both sides of the divide, and in particular, Everton with a tough one away to Brentford this weekend, and they're sitting down at the bottom. They don't get a result there, they could be hard and fast at the bottom this
Frank
weekend.
Lampard, I think, is in a bit of trouble there, you know. I mean, he could be the first manager. I wouldn't like to see it, because I like to see the young managers doing well, you know, and particularly someone like him, Declan. He's got a lot of experience as a player, but just hasn't really cut his teeth as he is as a manager. So that's going to be... they just haven't spent enough money, Everton, so they're in a little bit of trouble. And Brentford, well, we saw what they did to United. They're very, very difficult to beat, you know.
Yeah, and of course, there's only, what, a week to go in the transfer window as well, so we'd expect a lot of activity over the next few days amongst the top clubs as they try to fill the gaps that they see within their squad. But I think another team that's doing really well here this season has been Fulham. Outstanding start to the season, and the new Craven Cottage, with the new development in Craven Cottage, is going to be fantastic there. It's one of the finest grounds to go and watch football in, so I'm particularly pleased that they've had such a fine start to the season.
Thanks for listening to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken, and Reggie. Have a good weekend.